We're back on In Focus, News Radio KMAN, here on a Tuesday morning. City Commission meets tonight. They have a legislative session starting at 7 o'clock. You can, if you can't make it out there, they do stream those live at cityofmhk.com, also on their Facebook page, and on Cox Cable Channel 3. Getting back to the general agenda items here tonight, there's five of them on the agenda. We're up to item D here, which is more discussion, I guess. You guys finally have a proposal for the community house and building it fourth in Humboldt.
We do, Brandon. Thank you. The last two items are non-action items. They're discussion topics and reviewing a couple different proposals. As you mentioned, the first one there is the we did have a proposal. We went out for a request for proposals for folks that might be interested in doing something with the community house and whether we wanted to purchase it and renovate it for a particular cause. And so we did have a proposal, and that proposal is subject to some investment in that facility of about a minimum of $2 million. If that investment occurs, the city would provide a $500,000 grant to the developer to be able to do that. One of the key provisions is that the sale would be subject to a restricted covenant that would require the building to stay on the state and National Historic Registers, which has been a key component for that. Also, the final design of the facility, and anticipated it to be a mixed use of office and residential, is what the proposed use of the facility would be. And the intent would be is that obviously it's been a public facility for a long time, and off the tax rolls, this would put it back on the property tax rolls, and it's estimated that it would generate about $40,000 to $50,000 a year in total taxes, which could eventually reimburse the Economic Development Fund for the $500,000 grant. And so, again, this is a proposal that to convert the use. The building needs a lot of work. It's a certainly been a challenge for the city to meet those needs. It was clear back in the 1987 quality of life bond issue where there was about $200,000 put into the building. That was to create some upgrades to it. We tuck pointed one of the brick on the most of the brick on the south side of the building is a softer brick because there used to be a building adjacent to it. So it needs a little bit more work from time to time. There's been some roof work. Accessibility was one of the components, and there was a small lift that was put in at that time. But the city hired Bruce McMillan Associates to do a detailed analysis of the facility for upgrading full accessibility to the various rooms and areas and still maintain the historic integrity of the facility. Obviously, the big open space, it was a community building, a chamber building. The Rotary Club was instrumental in its founding of USO. All of that has had a lot of storied history in that particular building. And so preserving that history has been an important component of that. And it would appear that this proposal certainly would do that. The developer would be able to access some historic tax credits to help them with that particular renovation. And so we're looking for feedback from the commission on this particular item, whether they want to move forward with this proposal and finalizing a development agreement. Both the Historic Resources Board and the Park and Rec Advisory Board have reviewed the proposal and have opined favorably on the proposal.
All right.
Yeah, the I think if you look at this from a business perspective, as Ron said, if it's not on the tax rolls now and we pull in between $40,000 and $50,000 a year, you look at the return on investment. So that's about a 12-year payback, which is not bad at all in commercial real estate. One of the questions that frequently gets asked is, why didn't you maintain it up to now? Sometimes a building shape and the things that have to be done to make it into the purpose that you think you would like it to be just don't work out. This building is misshapen inside, so you really it's like trying to make something that you just can't fit in it. So I would say, on the other hand, the historic perspective of this building, if you've ever been inside, it's not remarkably historic. In other words, the construction is not too fancy. It doesn't particularly represent any particular period. And so one of the things the developer runs into is trying to preserve some of these things as he goes along to make sure that it is historically correct. And there's probably five areas that he has to continue with. But I think he's done a good job. If you look at the pictures of what's in there now and the condition of things that are in there now and his plan for what he's going to make it into, I think people would really be excited about the potential of this building. So we have, obviously, this is going to take a lot of thinking. That's a complete change in direction for a historic building. But I think the plan is a good one, and I think economically it's sound.
All right, we've got a caller here waiting on the line. Good morning, you're on In Focus.
Well, that's all well and good, but you know you've had that letter from the FAA about building the bigger, wider, longer runway out there in the pasture at the airport. And we could also, you know, we talked about using the runway as a taxiway since your taxiway is too close to the building after we get the runway done, the old runway as a taxiway. But, you know, down there with the, we also got to raise those water levees 3.5 feet, according to the Army Corps of Engineers. And the Army Corps had that buyout program, you know, for the flood zones. If we'd have spent that buyout money on retention ponds and reduced the flood potential down through Wildcat Creek, it's not a historical thing we want to preserve, the flooding. We want to do away with the flooding. You know, even a retention pond, if you started with one there behind the police station to alleviate that threat to the police station and out behind Home Depot, all that wooded area, into a retention pond, and then work our way back up to the farmers out in the field that need those ponds, maybe it'd be a Mother May I do thing. When they see it happening and can see it working, they would appreciate having those ponds out on their own property. We could spend that buyout money on flood elimination. Okay, thank you for being there.
Thank you.
A lot to cover there, yeah. But we'll take a stab at some of that.
Yeah, I'd just say that on the Wildcat Creek, all the studies that have been done for us show that you've got to, because of the size of the catchment area for that Wildcat Creek, you've got to start upstream. You got to begin with those detention ponds, probably in addition to retention that the farmers have, and cut down that flow, because it's the rate of flow. It's not necessarily how much comes down over a long period, but if it comes down too fast, then you've got a problem of where it goes. So if you can shed that off before it gets downtown, doing something down behind the police station, for example, doesn't do anything, because it'd fill up so quickly and just overflow and off it goes. So you've got to capture a little bit of a time upstream. Corps of Engineers obviously has particular programs they operate with, and so does FEMA. So those buyout programs are very specific, and we're having an action here that Ron will talk about in just a minute that points out maybe a slightly different direction that they may be going, and maybe we'd like to go as well. So good question. It's just that all of the data suggests and all the modeling suggests we've got to capture it upstream quite a ways.
And there'll be obviously the Wildcat Creek Resiliency Group that's meeting on that. The city and Riley County have gone together and hired Wood Environmental, and they're doing some analysis on adding additional capacity to farmers' ponds, which could be a significant benefit to them in a dry year especially. Now we're looking at some combination of improved retention but expanded detention in that particular watershed in various areas. And so as that as that analysis and any kind of proposal takes shape, I think we're targeting the July city-county meeting for them to provide some initial update to the governing bodies relative to that discussion.
And I think people may remember that we had already taken a look. Wood Environmental had also looked at the Fort Riley side, so we've got data over there as well, and that has to work its way through the Corps of Engineers and back into MCOM for decisions.
And we have been using the FEMA buyout funds in the Wildcat watershed significantly, and actually the next item is a further discussion about some other potential buyout components in the Wildcat Creek watershed.
You want to hold that one through the break?
We'll do
here?
It. Okay.
We'll do that when we come back here on In Focus, News Radio KMAN.